Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Spread.
Hey guys, Ryan Spread here from Somewhere in the Skies, and welcome to a very special sort of impromptu live stream we're doing tonight. Some really cool stuff has come to light by our guests tonight, and we're going to highlight it here tonight on Somewhere in the Skies. We're going to break it down, go through it, and all that other stuff. So I'm really excited to have with me for the very first time today on Somewhere in the Skies, Dan Warren, which we will be bringing him in just a little bit. But before we do that, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the season premiere of Ancient Aliens this past week. I am on Ancient Aliens. I never in my life thought I would be saying that. You know, I've been critical of the show in the past, and now I'm on it. So there you go. I agreed to do the show if it was going to be about a lot of the modern day stuff going on with the Pentagon and UFOs and all that. And the more I got talking to the people over at Ancient Aliens, the more I realized they're really going for something new with the show in their 18th season. So yeah, look for me on future episodes as well this season. But I want to thank everyone for sharing the show, for tuning in. I was told that it was one of the highest rated episodes they've had in a really long time. So thank you. Thank you for the support on that. That's all I got. But we do have a special co-host joining me tonight as well. So let's bring him in. You love him? You hate him? Here he is. I know, man. That's my new thing for you.
Wow. All right. Cool.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's accurate.
How you doing, man?
How are you? Thanks for the invite. Appreciate it.
Of course, and thank you for joining us on your day off over at UCR. I really appreciate it. You were the first person I thought of to come in for this thing with Dan because he dropped this thing on TikTok a couple days ago, and it blew up.
It's awesome, really blew man. Up. Like, yeah, I mean, I have you talked to Lee Spiegel about this document?
So I know Dan has in the past, and I know he was one of the reasons that Dan went digging for this, and I recall Lee maybe bringing this up on your show as well. But I personally
it a little bit. But the way Dan Warren breaks it down is hands down the best breakdown of this Air Force document that I've seen. But yeah, I want to get into it with him because there's a ton of questions. He's going to be on my show next week too. So you know, depending on how much time we have here, we may have some backup questions when he comes back next week because it's like Lee said. If it's real, if it's really real, a real document, which he thinks it is, and I'm sure Dan does as well, and I believe it is a real document. It is a real Air Force manual.
It's pretty cool.
People brought up some great points about it to me when we had a post discussion in the Discord. People were like, but think about it this way and this way. So I want to run by those, by Dan and by you, and see what you guys think or what you guys have heard about it.
Absolutely. And I know Dan even brings that up in the videos as well. And we were chatting offline about some people think this is nothing. Some people think it's pretty cool, but it's something and it's worth talking about. And I hadn't heard of it before. So I immediately started reading the chapter. I'm like, wow, could you imagine going to an academy and busting open that book? And then you see this, a chapter on UFOs.
Well, imagine the class that you went to that you reviewed this in.
Yeah.
That's the thing that blows my mind is that there was a day where you went into class and this is the chapter you reviewed with a professor.
You know, it's like crazy.
An Air Force professor, essentially. So, yeah, it's wild. I have some theories. I have some pretty good reasons as to why they would write something like that. But again, let's see what Dan says.
Let's bring him in. Yeah, the man of the hour. He's on TikTok as Fifth Pillar of Emphasis. He's an engineer. He's a UFO researcher as well. Dan Warren, welcome to Somewhere in the Skies, my man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan. Don't call me a researcher. People are going to throw a flag on that. I investigate the UFO.
I don't know, man. You are a good researcher.
You've done a hell of a lot more research than a lot of people who claim to be researchers. I can tell you.
If you want to call yourself an armchair researcher, just to be serious.
I'll caveat it. And there's an asterisk next to the word researcher in my title.
There we go. We'll go with that. You're too polite, my man. Well, hey, it's your first time on the show. You know, this might be the first time for a lot of my viewers or listeners seeing you. I know you've been on a few other shows as well, but would you mind kind of telling us a little about yourself? How did you get interested first in UFOs? And maybe what got you to go over to TikTok, an app that I'm still trying to understand myself? Oh man, I don't know, but you're killing it over there. So yeah,
appreciate
give us
that.
The origin story if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I've always been a fan of the bigger mysteries in the world. So since my childhood, I've always looked into books in the library that kind of piqued my interest, like Loch Ness Monster, and everybody was into Bigfoot and things like that. When you're kids, that got me into the ancient histories and ancient origins of mankind. So I dug into that. That's carried over into a fascination with the bigger questions in life. And that's where one of the biggest ones, of course, is are we alone in the universe? So that's where I started getting interested in that when I was young. Of course, X-Files was around when I was in my teens, and it just continued to go from there. It's a topic that has had my dedicated interest for a while, and then it would wane because of the stigma associated with it. I'd be embarrassed to let people know that I'm interested in this topic even. So I would kind of shy away from it, thinking that I'm wasting my time in investigating something like this. And then I'll get back into it. You just get in the pool and you get out of the pool, or you jump in, you jump out. And I got back into it fairly heavily in 2017, a little bit before then. And the timing was right at that point. TTSA came out, Lou came out, but the guy that really got my attention was Steve Justice, because he is a fellow technical minded dude like me. I'm a mechanical engineer. He's an aerospace engineer. He was the top of the pyramid when it comes to high tech aerospace. So for him to step out on that stage meant a lot to me, because I know what that means to be at the level he was. And for him to give that up and step on a stage with Tom DeLonge, it really got my attention. So I became a first round investor in TTSA, mainly so that I could have skin in the game, be interested in the topic even more. It's like gambling on a sports game. If you watch a basketball game, you're going to be interested in it. But if you have money on the game, you are definitely going to be focusing on the nuances of the game, the percentage, the three pointers that are going down, everything like that. So that's what it was, something I could do to help me stay focused on the topic and not want to back out of it like I have in the past. And then we get to more modern, or just the recent years, like 2020, of course, everybody got bored sitting at home for so long. So I was trying to think of stuff to do besides just consume. So I reached out to Lou actually when I first started saying, hey, I heard Lou Elizondo talk about getting off the couch and getting involved. I felt like he was talking to me when he said it. I want to do something. I don't know what yet. So I reached out to Lou Jimenez and just kind of asked him for some advice, and he gave me some. So that kind of started the snowball rolling down the hill. I started on YouTube, but I'll be honest, my production skills, my editing skills, not up to par. Like, you guys are hands down, like running away with it. So I looked at TikTok after Andreas Freeman Stahl pointed out that he was getting some major views just by rebranding or taking some of the information that he had readily available and putting it out there. So I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. I went out there and looked. No, there's no competition for what I do on TikTok right now. So, so that's a big plus for somebody just trying to get into it. And the entry level technical knowledge that you need to start making TikTok videos, lowest that you're going to find. It is an app that has everything you need to start today. So anyone can do it. And that included me. I'm anyone. I'm just like anybody else. So I started doing it and started with anything. The more you do it, the more efficient you become at it, the more competent you become. And so that's where it's kind of rolled into. And I've started to incorporate the use of my computer to try to increase the quality of it. It's an app that allows me to be very flexible. I can cover whatever I want because I'm only doing short little videos about it. I'm not doing a lot of super deep dives, except for this last time that worked out really well. So maybe I should be doing deep dives more
often. It deserved a deep dive, man. But sure.
That's the origin story. So a lifelong interest in the topic that's waned just like anybody else. Got off the couch and got involved and started having the conversation.
Exactly. And that's why we're having this conversation today. And that's so cool. What you said, like Steve Justice was the guy who kind of reinvigorated you, like, and saying like, that was one of me, you know, a fellow engineer. Engineers are not people I think of a lot when I think of the UFO topic, but then it just dawned on me, of course they're going to be interested. Like, this could revolutionize technology forever when it comes to engineering of anything. So that's pretty cool, man, that he's the one that kind of showed you like, it's okay in my profession to be interested in this and to talk about it.
Nuts and bolts like that. Yep. I was all nuts and bolts for my entire life because I'm mechanically inclined. It's what I'm drawn to until these recent years have come out where there's more to it than just nuts and bolts. So that's been kind of a turn that I didn't expect, a shifting course that kind of caught me off guard when we started talking about other aspects of the phenomena besides nuts and bolts.
Yep. Yeah. Welcome to ufology. It'll do that. It'll do that for sure. Well, I mean, a lot of people in the chat, Dan, are asking, what are we talking about? Like, what is this thing that you found, you dug up and brought forth on TikTok? So I think what I'm going to do actually is we're going to watch the first video of the TikTok thread that you put out. I think it was 11 videos total. Okay, cool. So let's go ahead and play that now and we'll come back on the other side and get your thoughts on, tell us what you thought about this, how you found it, and all that. All right, my man. So let's go ahead and play that now. Here we go.
This may be hard to believe, but the U.S. Air Force Academy used to educate its cadets about UFOs between 1968 and 1970. And this wasn't just some professor's opinion. This was in their textbook, which was confirmed by the Deputy Director of Public Information at the Air Force Academy. The cadets that enrolled in Physics 370 were required to have a textbook titled Introductory Space Science. The very last chapter in this textbook was titled Unidentified Flying Objects. And according to the Lemoore Advanced, the students were taught to stop scoffing at UFOs and instead to keep an open mind on the subject. This course was an elective that attracted about 20 students per semester. That means for the 5 semesters that this was in place, about 100 cadets were exposed to this information. But I got my hands on a copy of it, so I'm going to expose the rest of the world to this information. So make sure you hit that follow button. This textbook was written in 1968, back when the Air Force was still collecting UFO reports through Project Blue Book. But since the Air Force-sponsored Condon Report came out in early 1969 and stated that nothing had come from the study of UFOs in 2 decades, they decided to remove it from the curriculum. The findings of the Condon Report also resulted in the termination of Project Blue Book in that same year. Project Blue Book concluded by stating the following: no UFO reported, investigated, and evaluated by the Air Force has ever given any indication of threat to our national security. There has been no evidence discovered by the Air Force that sightings categorized as unidentified represent technological developments beyond the range of present-day scientific knowledge. There has been no indication that sightings categorized as unidentified are extraterrestrial vehicles. Based on those conclusions, the Air Force removed their chapter about UFOs and replaced it with a chapter called Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, which just so happens to be the term that they used in the Gillibrand Rubio Gallego Amendment, which establishes the next incarnation of Project Blue Book thanks to the signing of the NDAA for 2022. So you're not going to want to miss what comes next.
Nice, man. What's it like seeing yourself?
It's really hard to watch those videos when it's you looking back at you. I hate watching my own videos.
A little trippy, I can imagine. Well, let's talk about the content. Chapter 33 of this textbook. Can you tell us a little maybe about what textbook this was in, where, and who put this thing out there? Any information you can give us on what we were looking at there.
So I think the best story is the one that Lee Spiegel tells about how he came to know that this thing existed, because I found out about it from his interviews with Micah Hanks is the first time I heard it. And then I heard it on Lou's show as well. And he got introduced to it by none other than J. Allen Hynek. And anytime that guy's name is involved, to me, that catches my attention. So I thought that was amazing when I found that out. So I turned around and started to search for this document, and I found it on kufon.org. But since then, I have also found that this Mystery Wire has put out a scanned copy of the chapters, but it's a little bit more legible on the kufon.org site than this one. You can also copy and paste it off the other one. But there's, the context is always important. I always, like, one of the goals of my TikToks, the goals of my videos are to provide context to the situations that are currently arising that people that are new to the subject might not be aware of. Mm-hmm. I always use the example of, if I say something happened in 1947, everybody knows what 1947 means to somebody that's engaged in this topic. Not everybody knows that. People that are just getting into it are going to need a little bit of background. So I try to provide a background to the information that I provide. So the very first chapter, or the opening of the kufon.org, provides the context for what I just talked about on that video, that the Lemoore Advance actually found out about it, vetted the information in 1970, and made it an article about it. But getting to the book, it was introduced in 1968. And like I said, three, maybe five semesters worth of students passed through it. It looks like it's a junior level class because it was taught in a course called Physics 370. The textbook that it was written is called Introductory Space Science. So I took two physics classes in college, and I don't remember anything fun about those two semesters. All right, maybe it was three semesters, but don't tell anybody.
Quiet.
But it was tough. It was a battle to get through it. I can't imagine getting something like this slipped into it. So,
dude, I mean, this, I just want to read this from Joseph quick. Dad, turn to chapter 33, class. We're about to blow your goddamn mind. That's exactly what I imagine.
So my understanding is that the two gentlemen that wrote it were affiliated with Project Blue Book. I haven't vetted that information, but ever since this went out on Twitter, and I mean, let's face it, Eric Weinstein blew this thing up. When he retweeted it, that's when the masses found out about it. It was doing okay until then, but he really put the nitrous on it when he retweeted it. So thank you, Eric, if you ever see this. I bought him a virtual drink. I went out with my wife last night and bought him a drink. Posted a picture about it, and I told him, I bought you a drink. Hope you like whiskey and water. Oh, and I drank it for you too. So we're good.
Yeah, it was Major Donald G. Carpenter and Lieutenant Colonel Edward R. Thurkelson.
Yep.
Okay.
Those guys. Cool.
Yeah. That's where, I mean, because we discussed this too on the show, and then we had a post discussion, like I said earlier, on the Discord, and I was blown away by this document. I was absolutely floored. I'm like, this existed. This was in an Air Force manual, and this was taught in a class. Like, I cannot imagine the questions or the reasons why this is even in there. Why is this in there? Even if it's only for two or three semesters. How many semesters was it, Dan? Three? Two?
It was from 68 to 70. I think that means 3 to 5 semesters. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, at least. Man,
we got to find someone who took that course.
Well, I'm curious to know what else Major Donald G. Carpenter and Lieutenant Colonel Edward Thurgelson also wrote. What other kind of papers they wrote. I think that's something worthy of looking into. Because if they I want to just know what their writing style is like, maybe it does match this sort of text. Maybe they wrote other papers that have to do with this topic. I don't know if anybody's looked into that. I would imagine so, considering how long this information's been out. But yeah, I mean, it's this is something I had no idea about, and I've been into this topic for a long time. And yeah, when I also found out, I was like, wait a second, who recommended this paper? Like, who found this? How did this happen? And where it came from, I was like, this is insane. How is this not front page news? How did people not notice this in 1968? There's so many questions about this chapter. What's your biggest question, Dan?
Is there so much specific information included in this? I mean, it's there's some information that I tried to vet myself. Like, they talk about, in particular, I was drawn to the history section of it, where they say that they have carvings from the Sahara from 47,000 years ago, depicting a human shaped creature with a helmet, and it looks like a trunk. Elephant trunk coming off of it, which would be a breathing apparatus. That was one of the things that they referenced. I could not find anything that documents that provides a image of what they were talking about. Those are the biggest questions I have. Is that's a very specific and bold claim to say that it's been global in nature. I don't think that's a question. I don't know anybody that argues that it's all right. So there are some people that will argue it's just an American issue. Most people say it's global in nature, but the time, like, that's the question I want to know. And that's the question that I think is going to come forward before who it is. I think they're going to talk about when this started. So for it to be 47,000 years ago, specifically, is when this thing was engaging in whatever it was, started engaging with us. It's very specific and it's a very bold claim. So that to me is what stands out.
Yeah, the specificity of it is also what stood out to me. But I'm curious, what do you think the motivation of putting this into a manual is?
So that was my third video, was basically saying, like, hey, suspend your judgment.
Right.
Don't focus on, do I believe every word that they're telling me?
Right.
Focus on, why would the Air Force be exposing their future leaders? Because it's not like this is basic training, boot camp. This is like I'll call them the elite of the Air Force, the brain.
I mean, a major wrote this.
Yeah.
And lieutenant colonel.
So why?
This is not just like two schmoes writing this chapter.
Right. Well, and then too, the other thing that really stuck out to me, I had it up on the screen earlier, was the physiological effects. Now, this is, you know, something that I know they looked into with ATIP, and it's been around forever. Like, what are the physical effects of these close encounter experiences? And I found it really interesting that was also included in this chapter as well. And a lot of people are like, yeah, this is just like what Blue Book was looking at. And of course, yeah, no, that seems to be the case. But why was it in an Air Force Academy manual? Is my big question. And why, like you said, were they being so specific in what they wanted these students to know? That's what really caught my attention. I don't know. Am I wrong on that? The physiological effects, that I always go back to that's what we've been kind of studying for many years, and what we hopefully will be studying in this new, whatever, DOD program or Gillibrand thing, whatever that amalgamation is going to become. We're going to be looking at the physical effects again. And hopefully the Air Force is going to be involved. I don't know. don't know.
Well, one thing that was somewhat shocking to me is the information and the perspective that was the picture that was painted in this chapter. Man, it still rings true today. Like, it doesn't feel like we've gained a lot of ground since 1968 when this thing was written. We're still asking those same questions. That's another thing that kind of shocked me is I've got the same questions now that these guys had back then. Mm-hmm. When do the answers start to get exposed to us?
But I'm curious to know what you think is the reason why they included this chapter. I'm curious to know what your hypothesis is.
So there's the what I read hypothesis, which is, well, it was an exercise in thinking outside of the box and trying to stay open-minded and not jumping to conclusions, just absorbing the information and trying to not stand on one side of the line or the other so rigidly. Mm-hmm. Why I think it's in there, I mean, I think it's the Air Force was investigating UFOs. They had collected a lot of information through Project Blue Book. Blue Book kind of like I suspect Chris Mellon held the hand of the person writing the Gillibrand Amendment. Right. I feel like people in Blue Book were holding the hand of the people writing this chapter and saying, hey, put this in there. Leave that out. This is and this is me speculating. I don't want anyone to think I have any proof of this. But I think it's in there as a form of, hey, this might, if Blue Book continued, I wonder if this would become even more elaborate. I wonder if it was the beginning of, hey, we're moving forward with this. We need you guys to be aware of it before the rest of the general public becomes aware of this so that we can be a few steps ahead. We need our leaders to be ready for this in the future. But then the
Condon report
changed things.
Right, Dan. Yeah, and we'll get to that. Alex says, just in case shit happens, maybe. That's so true. We know there are, within government, there are contingencies for everything, whether natural disasters, whatever, terrorist attacks. But there's also, I've been told, there are contingency plans if we are to make contact or if there is an invasion from another planet. I could be, you know, completely being told, you know, disinformation on that, but I have heard that there are contingencies for things like this. So yeah, maybe again, they're trying to get ahead of it, ahead of the game. So they're not looking like they are today saying we have no idea what any of this is. It's not Russia. It's not China. We don't know, but it's in our airspace and we can't do anything about it. So.
Well, here's the thing that I kind of gather when I was reading it, because the thing that keeps flashing in my brain when I read it is trying to put myself in the perspective of being in that classroom and what kind of questions popped up after reading through this or coming into class and going, okay, everybody, chapter 33, go ahead. What are your questions? And then people start firing away. I'm sure be like, okay, why is this in here? Number one. But I think the thing that I sort of theorize, and again, speculation city here, is that this was a way for a couple of years after Blue Book to answer a whole bunch of questions that might come up after an experience or after a personal sighting by an Air Force officer, because I think this is a perfect opportunity to be like, these are the answers, you guys. You don't have to report it. You don't have to. It takes all the curiosity out of what this phenomenon could be. It really does kind of give you a whole bunch of answers and things to look at if you're interested, but it leads you sort of in a pretty interesting. It's a cool direction that this manual leads you down. and it's almost like teaching a kid how to play with fire. But instead of playing with fire, you teach them how to build a campsite, how to respect the fire, how to put out once the fire is, you're done with it. All of the things that is responsible about making a fire and why you should be responsible with a fire. So that way, when their buddy a few months down the road's like, hey, let's play with these matches, he's like, yeah, I'm good. I know how to build a fire. I'm good. This is what this kind of feels like. So that way, if you have an Air Force pilot or colonel that gets a report from one of his men or sees one himself, he could go, oh yeah, chapter 33. Oh, also, I should probably shut up about this because the ramifications are because they also go through in this manual the punishments of reporting these things. They tell you straight up, like, you'll probably get demoted, you'll probably be possibly fired or labeled clinically insane. And it's like, you know, so it's like, here are the answers, so that way you don't have to be curious. And then that helps them keep the circulation of secrecy intact, because they just take the curiosity out of it. I don't know. That's kind of what I felt when I read it. It was like, here you go. Here are the answers. That way you don't have to ask.
So one of the things that I've asked myself is, how come they wrote this chapter basically saying, here's a chapter about UFOs. Yeah. Why didn't they write a chapter saying UFOs aren't real, and here's why, but you should still take these. It could be these other things instead. Like, how come they didn't frame it with, this isn't a real thing.
Right.
It's, you guys need to know that it's not. And this is what the other possibilities are that are left on the table.
Right.
Right.
Well, because I feel like the rest of the book is pretty much different ways of clarifying what your job is, you know, and what, and how to see things in the sky and how to read your instruments and know where you are in the sky or whatever the battlefield, whatever else they're learning. I'm assuming it's, like you said, it's not basic training. But it's, you know, I'm assuming the rest of the book is just a lot more clarification, a lot more almost reading like stereo instructions, really boring chapters. Whereas this was probably the funnest day they had in the whole semester.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. That's like the day when the teacher puts like a video on instead of lecturing. You're like, oh, finally, like something a little different.
I can't imagine Michael, what lunch discussion was after this class.
Exactly. Michael said FEMA has engaged in zombie apocalypse training. Yeah, man, they have contingencies for everything. Dan, there was something you brought up that I do kind of want to talk about, and that's stripping it of the curiosity. The Condon report. So that thing came out, obviously deflated a lot of UFO believers out there, and probably satisfied a lot of scientists out there. But that is when I believe this chapter was pulled. It was pulled from the textbook. Is that correct?
Yes. The Condon report came out in 69, I think it was December 69. I might have the month off, but yeah, it had been in circulation. This chapter was in the book in 68. The Condon report came out in 69, which this part, it kind of cracks me up. They didn't want to pay to reprint the entire book, so they left it in for another semester or two until they could reprint the books. So there can't be that many of these things floating out there. Like, it's got to be just such a rare piece of American history that is floating around. So like J. Allen Hynek showing it to Lee Spiegelman, my hands would have been shaken. It would have been awesome. I think the Condon report came out and they revised the chapter. They didn't remove it. They said, all right, we're going to put something in there that conforms to the findings that were put forth in the Condon report. So they actually provided more possible explanations to the UAP phenomenon, which is, I mean, we're talking UAP now instead of UFOs. But they didn't go into the history. They didn't go into the alien species like they did in the previous one. They stripped it of all the specificity type items and went very vague in general.
Right. Yeah. And just changing that one from UFO to phenomena. I mean, that's enough to be like, okay, they're definitely going for something different here, like we are today. And I mean, like, just, we're learning UAP has been around for a hell of a lot longer than we thought it was.
Well, just in the first two pages, it gives you the descriptions, the size, the shape, the luminosity, the colors, the behavior of these objects, the locations, altitudes, directions, patterns of paths, flight characteristics, periodicity of sightings, time duration, curiosity of inquisitiveness,
hostility.
Like, these are insane as associated effects, after effects, like the after effects, burned areas or animals, depressed or flattened areas, dead or missing animals, mentally disturbed people, or missing items.
Mentally disturbed people. That's it. Definitely
like after effects. Well, like, no, that's after. So like after, that, I think that is basically summing up. You could be abducted. You could be burned, you know, on some levels. You could be depressed. Things could happen to your crops. If you live on a farm, things could go missing. They're little kleptomaniacs. Like, there's all sorts. And then mentally disturbed, like having to deal with, say, a scary abduction scenario.
Right.
You know, I don't think that means like they found mentally disturbed people around there. Is, I guess, we should probably clarify that.
Well, I would think it'd be more like PTSD type symptoms.
Correct.
Would be what surfaced after an encounter.
Correct.
A lot of people are asking where they can read this chapter. By the way, guys, I just put a link in the chat there for you over at Mystery Wire. But was it QFOS you said? Dan, Kufon. That had a better version. Kufon. Okay.
Kufon has a much better. Kufon.org. You can just search for introductory space science and you'll be able to find it via Google links.
So as an engineer, Dan, I'd love to know, like, what in this chapter, since it's a book on physics and everything, what as an engineer did you find most compelling about the chapter? Anything really stick out to you as compelling in terms of that?
As an engineer, I'm going to struggle to answer this one, I'm afraid. They don't really get into the propulsion systems or how they were manufactured, the material science. Mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated by fasteners. Like, to me, like if it doesn't have rivets and screws, then it is a 3D printer type product, or it's something beyond our known manufacturing capabilities. So that's what I look for. There's nothing in there in particular that's engineering related, I guess. I would have to conclude.
No, fine, man.
What was the most fun part of reading this document for you?
Oh, absolutely. It was the retelling of the species that orbited the Earth.
Yeah,
that was so weird, man.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Came down.
And they started with that. That was so weird.
Like that was how they started one of the sections. And let's just call it what it is. They described an alien species migrating to Earth. Yeah. They got in a fight with each other, had a civil war. One of them threw a nuke at the other one, destroyed them, went into deep depression, and then left forever. Like, okay, that's what they described.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second, because this is crazy. Because, like, this is the part where I'm just like, come on, dude. Like, it's almost, but then you see the rock carvings that they talk about in the Sahara, where they're wearing, like, what looks like space helmets. Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't the actual one. That was one that I found that was similar right. to a depiction. But the 47,000-year-old description of the person wearing a breathing apparatus, I couldn't find a picture.
Or the but just the descriptions of them and the carvings in Ireland that they discussed. Okay, so if there was an ancient alien race that migrated to Earth, and the humans on Earth looked to them as gods, and they were throwing nukes at each other. Where I mean, we should be finding this tech everywhere, no?
Well, so
buried.
There are indications, and it's, I'm not going to be able to tell you like 47,000 years, whenever that event happened, they found something, but they did find like the spike in nuclear activity. And I always pronounce nuclear wrong. So I'm sorry, people that are going to jump all over me.
It's like,
I'm Southern.
Like some people love cilantro. Some people, it tastes like soap.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But like there was a spike in radiation around the globe during the, why is it slipping my mind right now?
Tuska something, right?
Yeah.
Tunguska?
Tunguska. That huge explosion.
The Russian meteor that exploded.
That was Tunguska.
Tunguska, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So there
great
was evidence.
Great two-part on X-Files as well, guys, just so you know. Sorry.
But from my understanding, there is radioactivity readings in locations around the world. Some of them are, I guess, it can happen naturally, which still is fascinating to me that can be a natural occurrence. I believe that's something that happened over in the Middle East and in some location. I've forgotten exactly where they found evidence of it, but it was from a long time ago, like a million years ago, and they still find fallout from that. So it can be a naturally occurring process from the few articles I've read about it. I'm not an expert. But yeah, I would think there'd be some kind of evidence associated with it, but what like oral history, I mean, it sounds like Sodom and Gomorrah type of thing. It sounds like stories from our ancient ancestors before writing could occur.
It almost sounds like Dune. Like there were these gods that came down in these massive ships to come and collect spice, you know, and the locals rebelled and dug underground. And it's almost as if like these gods that came down had issues with the gods that were there and then took them out with some sort of catastrophic event. And then maybe the remnants of what was ever left over from those gods is kind of who we are today. And that's maybe how this hybrid theory plays into this whole thing, where maybe the gods, you know, ended up meeting with the mortals on Earth, and then boom, human. And then we're just kind of sitting here waiting for them to come back one day. I don't. Right. It's so wild to think of. It's almost like the fifth element meets Dune.
Yeah, it scares me to think about this, but also this idea of like a lot of these unknown artifacts that we found and we don't know where they came from or what they were used for, but they're there. We've uncovered them. We have them, but we don't know exactly what they were used for. And it scares me. It's kind of like that, you know, in Contact where they build the craft and they're like, we could be building the weapon to destroy ourselves. That's what always scares me, you know, with these craft that have supposedly crashed, with these pieces of debris that we found. Is it possible that this could be some sort of Trojan horse thing? And they're like, all right, either this is going to like change our technology and we're going to leapfrog ahead of every country and be the prominent power, or we're building our own device to destroy ourselves.
Thoughts about this whole UFO disclosure topic. Like, I feel like I'm doing the right thing, that I'm pushing forward trying to get the information out because I want the information. But then in the back of my mind, I start to question myself, like they've been hiding this and they've been hiding it for a reason. Am I doing the right thing by trying to push this disclosure issue forward and try to, I want the information. Am I being greedy? Am I being selfish? Should I not be doing that? Am I contributing to something that's going to be a net negative to humanity? I view it as an enormous positive for humanity myself. But then in the back of my mind, there's always that nagging thought, like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Maybe we don't want to know. Maybe we can't handle it. I want to sleep at night. Like, I have those questions fly through my head at times too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Swink McCloud makes a good point. We got to find out more about these two authors. That's so true. I mean, that would answer a lot of our questions. You know, could this be some weird fanfic that they wrote about UFOs just to mess with people? No, they wouldn't put it in an official textbook if that were the case. At least I don't think they would.
They could also, it could be just as simple, and I know some people probably won't like this, but it could be just as simple as to throw the idea out there for a couple semesters and gather intelligence on what people think about it, the idea of it.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, a lot of this could be who's going to say what, what's going to come. Yeah, could be an intelligence game of some sort. You know, a lot of people think with Lazar and stuff, they fed him all this stuff to see what he would go public with, if he would leak this stuff. So I don't know, you know, Lazar aside, we know that they've done that in the past.
Maybe these guys were writing this as, like you said, like a movie script. And maybe they were the influence for Eric Davis writing his supposed movie script.
Yeah. Oh, man, I knew we could somehow bring it to the Wilson documents.
I mean, honestly, you could start a brand new X-Files and the first episode could be the discovery of this manual. Like,
right.
Honestly, you can make a movie about it or definitely base a TV show off of it. And some sort of new paranormal investigative duo, you know.
Get on that, Dan. That's all you, man. Yeah, I can help you write the dialogue if you want.
I want to find out where they found their information to put this all together. Like, it's great that we have it in this condensed form. It had to have come from a broad range. Some people will say it's just typical UFO mythology or whatever, but it's very specific.
Well, by 1968, though, the United States military had pretty much secured the entire planet. You know, I'm sure there was many, as they call, spoils of war after the Second World War, and possibly books and information lost, data through the years that maybe has been seen by very few human eyes. And, you know, maybe this was just their way of sort of paraphrasing it, you know? Right.
And at the same time, we were also, the United States was securing space, the moon. Yeah. Like, we went to the moon in 69.
Leading up to the space race. You're right. Like, they're I mean, who knows? Yeah, maybe they're like, hey, we're going to space. We need to get people prepared for this. And so they put it in there and then maybe figured out, oh, we'll beat the Russians to the moon and then just call it a day and then stop.
Well, I guess you could also make that comparison to the James Webb telescope and then bringing Bill. Well, I guess they didn't bring Bill Nelson on, but yeah. Bill Nelson got brought on as a NASA administrator earlier in 2021 in advance of the James Webb telescope. Maybe they were concerned like, hey, we need to start saying like we might see something that we don't really expect to see. And we need to just be prepared for that.
Such a good point, man. I mean, that's what I'm hoping with the James Webb and with the Galileo project is, like Avi Loeb said, the skies are not classified per se. So like the government can do everything they want to, like, you know, stamp down the UFO thing when it comes to military, you know, what space, but they can't control the entire planet's skies. So when you do have something like James Webb out there, or you do have things like Galileo coming up, these are ripple effects from what the government or Pentagon did or did not do. And the response they get from the public of, that's not enough. Like, we're not happy with that. So we're going to go and do this instead and try to stop us. So that's why I think a lot of, I love that this was in a physics book, and I love that the conversation now in 2022 is leaning a lot more into the science of UFOs and the exploration of space rather than just the Pentagon. I think since 2017, that's all we've been focusing on is the government's involvement with this topic, you know, even up until this conversation with the Air Force. But the chapter ends, we won't give away everything, but the chapter ends with science and like how we need to continue looking at the UFO phenomenon because of the benefits it could give us in terms of science. So that was my long-winded way of saying, what do you make of this whole chapter? Like, what is the message that you think we should take away from all of this, Dan? I know that's a broad, big question, but yeah, what do you think we should look forward to by looking back at this chapter in this Air Force manual?
The process is long and arduous. Like, this isn't a quick solution. Like, I was on board with Richard Dolan's tipping point theory, where enough information would come out that it would just be at an avalanche of follow-up information. Based on what we've seen from 2017 and now the differences that we've seen from 1968 to now, it seems like it is a long, drawn-out process to get any information out in the public. And that's discouraging to some, but not to me, because the journey is the adventure in this particular case. We're all here. We are all seeking answers. We all want to know more. We're all digging. We wouldn't be digging like this if we had the answers already. We would just be like, okay, well, somebody's on it. We're going to wait and see what they tell us. But now it's all of us individuals around the globe. I mean, we're a global effort pushing on one topic, trying to get to the bottom of it. So the overarching thing to me is patience. Think for yourself. Yep. And continue to push.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more, man. I do want to read this one quote from the chapter, which kind of ties into what you're saying. Although the Condon Committee cautioned that nothing worthwhile was likely to result from such research, it suggested that all of the agencies of the federal government and private foundations should be willing to consider UFO research proposals, along with the others submitted to them, on an open-minded, unprejudiced basis. I mean, that says it all right there. We're saying that now today. The Pentagon is saying that. Like, we need to shed the stigma and we need to look into this because it could benefit us if we can exploit that technology, as the military likes to say. How will it benefit us? So I think you're right. A lot hasn't changed since this chapter was in this book or even before that. And we're asking the same questions today, and we're hoping to exploit the technology we see displayed in UAP, but we can't understand it. We still can't understand it. And that's both scary, frustrating, exciting, everything, which, you know, welcome to ufology, I guess.
Well, in the book itself, it says like it is hard for our science to explain. Stephen Greenstreet was on Ancient Aliens with you, and he was pointing out that in the UAP preliminary assessment, it says that the performance characteristics, we need to do more science to be able to understand them. I'm not quoting it word for word, of course, but that's still, to me, like, I missed that gem in the preliminary assessment, that our science hasn't caught up to what these things are. Our science can't explain it. That's a biggie. Sorry, my kids are running around in the hallway. You
might hear some noise. Oh, gosh, no, man. No, not at all. Luis, you got any more questions for Dan before we start to wrap things up here?
Well, I mean, just the one thing that was also really interesting, and again, this is just the first few pages. It talks about hoaxes and rantings due to unstable personalities, and, you know, basically saying that some suggest that these UFO reports are just hoaxes. And it's true in some cases, but there's a lot of cases where these are coming from pilots. But the first thing that they reference is a case that is they consider not a hoax, which is the Lonnie Zamora case in New Mexico. Ooh. And that's one case that they focus on in this report and just sort of highlight as this isn't a hoax. This isn't some, you know, hubcap in the sky taking a picture kind of thing. This is a real case.
That's also the case that my understanding is that flipped J. Allen Hynek from skeptic, right, and not really believing to being, not being able to deny it. I believe it was the Lonnie Zamora case.
They did also reference and tell people to take a close look at Betty and Barney Hill as well.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah. The Socorro case. I always love the part of the story that a lot of people don't talk about. Blue Book, it was like Hynek and a few other agents or whatnot with the Air Force were heading out there because they clearly wanted to be the first to get to the site when it happened, and their car broke down. And Hynek got pissed. He's like, we need to get there. Like, this is an active investigation. We could find trace evidence. And they're like, yeah, we got to wait for another government car. Might be another hour or so. And Hynek was literally like, fuck you guys. I'm going to hitchhike. So he gets out. He hitchhikes all the way to Socorro. And he was the first one on site, awesome. You know, besides Zamora and a few of the local law enforcement, just to get there to investigate. I love that story. I love hearing that. And pardon my French there. I didn't mean to swear. Sorry awesome. If your kids are listening, Dan.
I did have one last question for Dan. What are the biggest detractors of this manual or chapter that you've received or heard where you're like, okay, that might carry some water?
Well, it's the weirdest one to me is, why are we even talking about this? This is old news. But yeah. like I didn't
sometimes
know about
you need
it.
To recycle
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, like it's new to me. It's right. new to a lot of people. Like mm-hmm. I had one guy say, oh, this came out 25 years ago. And I'm like, dude, do you know how many people are under 25 on this yeah. planet? Like
they on TikTok nonetheless.
Yeah. Oh yeah. By the way, yeah. like that was another thing. I got a lot of shots across the bow about now it's on TikTok. Like it's just like a Southern accent. As soon as you say yeah. the word TikTok, people deduct 10 IQ points. So like, there's no respect for TikTok in ufology yeah. at the moment, but it's yeah. changing.
Hey, yeah, no, you gotta be the first for something, man. And I really think you're doing that. You're like Avi Loeb. You're putting yourself on the front lines to get this ridicule.
Whoa. That's a little much. I don't even have a front porch.
Yeah.
Fair enough. No, but I kind of put this on Twitter today as well. And, you know, I'm known as the nice guy in ufology, but when it comes to people who were shaming you for doing this and saying it's been out there, it's nothing. That's irrelevant. It's new to a lot of people. It was a revelation to me. I didn't know this chapter existed. So why not talk about it? Why not put it out on a platform of millennials and younger who have absolutely no idea what Roswell is, what Rendlesham is, what the UFO topic is, what it was and what it's going to be. So, I mean, I think it's awesome. Like, who cares if others have talked about it, if it's nothing? It's worth having the conversation, and it's getting eyes on it, and we can have those conversations. So to those people out there who did that, all I want to say is shut up. Move on, go do what you do, and skulk in the corner. Like, we're going to have fun talking about this.
Or at least watch the video before you criticize it. Like, based on their comments, they hadn't even watched the videos I had made. Like, yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? That's exactly what I said in here. And
there's a lot of that.
Admitted
that
he didn't even read the book. Like, how can you criticize this and say it's a nothing burger if you haven't read it, if you haven't done any looking into it? Some guy told you about it and you took his word? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the issue with skeptics. And we all should be skeptical all the time. Like, I'm not saying like we shouldn't be, but they have these predetermined answers. They don't even look at anything. You have a skeptic come on news with, you know, former deputy base commander, Charles Hull, who said, hey, I was in Rendlesham, 1980, a craft landed. I've got audio of it as it was happening. And, you know, they turn to the skeptic who just says, it was the lighthouse. It was the lighthouse out there. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay, so I know where the lighthouse is. I'm not an idiot. I'm the deputy base commander. And also, what year did this happen, Mr. Skeptic? Oh, I don't know. Oh, you don't even know what year the UFO case occurred that you're on television now trying to debunk. Cool. Just making sure. So that's a problem I run into too, man, is they don't even look. They probably didn't even look at your videos before they came out and started putting these knee-jerk reactions out there. So it is what it is, unfortunately.
So one of my favorite quotes in ufology is, I want to say his name's Robert Jacobs, Dr. Robert Jacobs. He's the guy that filmed the UFO as the warhead was going through the sky, and it went in the 3 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 9 o'clock position and shot a beam at it, and then it fell down. And he gets so mad because, like, he recounts the story. He's like, I know what I saw. My favorite quote is, Philip Glass can kiss my ass.
I love it.
Do you have any plans on what your next deep dive is going to be?
I'm taking a break from deep dives for a while. That, you guys don't realize how much, like, that was 175 background slides on that. Like, the fatigue was setting in towards the
end. You sent me the slide presentation. I still have to get my way through all of it. Well, I do want to ask you this, Dan, before we go. When it comes to the Air Force, they've been very quiet on everything going on right now. So do you think that's going to change? Are we going to start hearing more from the Air Force moving forward when it comes to this topic? Or will they once again be the ones being a part of the cover up at the very, you know, since they were at the very start of it?
Basing it on what's his name? The new Secretary of the Air Force, Kendrick. I think Fred Kendrick is his name. Or Kendall, that's it. I don't see it happening. He basically said, oh yeah, it's not something we're concerned about. It's not something we're going to look into until we're concerned about it. So you can take that type of a mentality and just plead ignorance and say, oh yeah, well, we didn't think that it was anything to look into. We're looking into it on our own. We're not telling you about it, but they've got their justification for sitting on their hands.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Lou?
Well, I'd like to see how long they sit on the hands once this new office gets established and maybe their budget gets cut by this new office because they're not sharing enough information. Maybe Mr. Kendall changes his tune. I mean, I don't know. You know, that's,
yeah, maybe we're going to get that chapter.
That's how the, back office, into the new office is supposed to work, right, Dan? I mean, essentially. You know, so we'll see. But I mean, if I feel like that's especially if you're taking over the Air Force, I feel like that's a pretty safe statement just to just put out, be like, yep, we're not interested in this, going to go status quo until I have to do otherwise. And maybe that office will make him do otherwise. So, I mean, at least he leaves the door open to changing it.
If I'm not mistaken, I think four of the co-sponsors of the Gillibrand Amendment were also on the Appropriations Committee. So yes, there's like a direct chain or link to the money for the performance of their UAP duties.
Yeah. And that doesn't even include the national security element to it as well. I mean, there's a chain of command there as well when it comes to national security issues and the committees that also have to do with that aspect of the conversation as well.
Yeah, exactly. So Alex says, can we have a vote from the panel? Is it real? I think he's referring to the chapter.
I'll vote. Yeah, that chapter's real.
Resounding yes, it's real. Yeah. It was in the book. You know, a matter of
it was taught. It was taught to Air Force students.
Yeah, J. Allen Hynek shared it with someone that has shared it with us. So I know that's not him coming to my house and laying it on my kitchen table, but it's as good as it's gonna get.
Yeah,
agreed. Yeah, that was a good question, Alex. No, I do firmly believe it was real. And Dan, I'm so happy you brought it to a audience who has never heard about this chapter, including myself. And I think it's awesome.
I think it's the reason why it's awesome is because maybe you're right, guy. We have heard this story before, but it's never been presented in such an easy way to understand as the way you did with your 11 or 12 part series.
I'm the fast food version of ufology, and yeah, it's 11.
Still fast food. They're 2 minutes and 50 seconds almost each video. They're almost 3 minutes long each video times 11 videos. That's a half hour of content. That's not just some fast food video. So, you know, you need to tip your hat to yourself a little bit. Like, this is a really great research thing that breaks down an Air Force manual training class in a very simple, easy to digest, understandable way that saves the house mom or the dad who's busy or the person who's at work, you know, just flipping on his lunch, looking for something to entertain himself. Like, this is a beautiful, beautiful little walkthrough, almost like a little sort of private museum of this document. And it's cool, man. And I think it's important, and you did an amazing job on it. So congratulations. I think it's presenting this story in a really fresh way to a whole new group of people that may have never heard about this before. Even if you have, this is a great way to share it with your friends that maybe either never have or have, and it's presented in a really just fun way to watch. So that was
the goal. Like, I always get in conversations with people who are like, oh, you need to read this book or read this article. And I always go, yeah, that sounds like homework. Got a short version. So I'm trying to read for people, make it easy to consume, and provide the context around whatever the information is so that people can have a better feel for the significance of what I'm trying to talk about or the event that has just occurred.
Yeah.
Exactly. Man. No, man, I just put a link. I think I did. I just put a ridiculously long link in the chat of your TikTok. But why don't you just give it to us just in case? Because it looks like I screwed something.
Yeah, I know.
You mind telling us where we can find it?
Just the fifth pillar of emphasis. And I have a YouTube channel as well that I'm trying to grow. I'm going to start putting some longer content on there. I'll probably compile all these videos into one and put them on my YouTube channel. So it's the fifth pillar of emphasis there as well. You can find me on TikTok at Dan Warren at Hey Look Over There. Look is spelled with a U instead of two O's because someone else beat me to it. But yeah, like, just look for the fifth pillar of emphasis on TikTok. You can even type just UFO and you're going to see my ugly mug and click on the plus button.
And also, Alex Garcia, I just sent you the PDF of it. So you can just open up the PDF if you want to check it out there too. Cause that was sent to me by Lee Spiegel. He's got it on PDF. So Alec, where can you post the PDF? I think we've posted it definitely on our Discord, but not everybody's part of my Discord, but, you know, I've got a PDF of it. If you want, just give me a shout and I'll send it to you.
Cool. I love it. Nightgazer says, Dan, you're great at cutting and condensing down super clear presentations. And then Michael Huntington says, great job. The more education about UFO history, the better. So many in the field these days don't know ufology. I could not agree more with Michael on that. So, hey, man, you're doing a service. You're fighting the fight. And you're on the front lines on a social media site that a lot of the people in ufology aren't even aware of. So I highly suggest everyone go get on TikTok, go follow Fifth Pillar of Emphasis, because you do make it very digestible. And that's a sign of a good teacher, man. So you taught me tonight. I have to thank you for doing this. I know you and Luis are going to go much deeper on his show next week. So one more time, Dan, before I let you go here, brother, tell us where we can find everything you're up to.
I want to just real quick say thank you to Eric Weinstein for retweeting it, of course. Thank you very much. Find me at the Fifth Pillar of Emphasis. Just look for UFO on TikTok. Find me on Twitter at Hey Look Over There. I have a link to my TikTok on my Twitter profile, so you can find me that way. And go to YouTube, subscribe to my channel so I can start doing live streams, because I'm not even close. I'm still a fledgling YouTuber.
Hey, man, me too. We'll get there together for sure. All right, brother, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to say goodnight to Luis, and then I'm going to talk some shop with my viewers. But Dan, I have to thank you so much for coming on Somewhere in the Skies tonight, my man.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure meeting a young gun.
We'll see you. We'll see you next week, buddy.
See you, Luis.
Not so much young anymore, but it's very nice of you, brother. All right, have a great night, all right?
Thank you.
Take care. Dude, that was amazing. That was my first time talking to Dan. Again, like, bringing this forward to an audience who's never heard of it is the most important thing you can do in this field. So I'm so happy we were able to just scratch the surface of it with him tonight. But I know you're going to have him on next week probably to dive a little deeper into this.
We could definitely dive into it again. It's fun. Dan, I mean, you know, Dan also, I don't know if you knew this, but Dan also was responsible for helping us get Tim Burchett on the Big Fun Home too.
Someone mentioned that in the chat earlier. I completely forgot.
Tim is his local rep, so he's got a dialogue with Tim. So Dan is an incredibly intelligent guy, one of the good guys in this fight. For sure.
Absolutely. I'm so
very level headed, very approachable. Yeah. Just wants to help. And he's just an absolute asset when it comes to this discussion and one of the new just awesome voices in the topic for sure.
He's the real young gun, let's be completely honest. But what else you got going on over at UCR this week, my man? Give it to us. What can we expect?
Tomorrow. Who do we have tomorrow? Oh yeah, we got Preston Dennett tomorrow, which will be cool.
Nice.
And then on Friday we got Jazz Shaw. He's going to come and talk about his article that he wrote in the debrief about the Michigan Lights. And then next week we got John Ramirez coming back, and we're also going to have Sean Webb join that conversation. So that'll be very cool as well.
Cool. I'm looking forward to the Jazz one. That Michigan case is one of my all-time favorites.
What's your favorite thing about it?
Honestly, it would have to be just the amount of attention paid to it by, you know, the radar locals. Operators, the locals, the weather people that were involved. There's just so much testimony of credible individuals. Right. Involved with it that we can pull from, and you really can't ask for more than that. So
it's a cool case, man. It's a cool case for sure.
Yeah, I believe you should talk to as well. Bill K. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Kolinsky, maybe. He's a MUFON investigator out in Michigan. Who looked heavily into it as well. Cool. I'll get you a link for him, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You got a good week going on over there, my man. So again, where can we find everything you're up to before we let you go?
You can find me on my Twitter handle right here at Lou Angeles. You can find us at the Unidentified Celebrity Review on YouTube. Pretty easy. Pretty easy to find.
McLeod says the audio. Duh. Yeah, I should have. There's audio to the Michigan case as well, which is pretty awesome. They're pretty spooked in that audio from what I remember. So we can't ask for more than that for sure. Awesome, my man. I'm going to let you go.
We could ask for more than that, right?
We could. We always could.
We
ask
could ask. I mean, like, I'd like to see the craft. Ask for that'd be nice. You know,
it'd be nice. Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably not going to get it, but I'll ask for it. All right, buddy. Have a good week. Awesome, fun show. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure, man. You're a gem.
Awesome. All right. Have a great night.
Peace, brother.
Bye. Guys, thank you. Thank you for joining me tonight. It was awesome to finally get to speak to Dan. I've been talking to him offline for a while now, and this definitely deserves more conversation. So be sure to check him out over on UCR next week. But other than that, if you didn't watch the premiere of Ancient Aliens, please go watch that. I believe it's on history.com. You can watch the first episode right now. And be on the lookout for Mysteries Decoded, the other show that I'm a part of. We're going to be premiering a new season of that later this year. I should have more info on that soon. And check out the show every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts. That's about it. If you want to help the show out, we have a Patreon as well. Your support means the world to me, and it truly makes Somewhere in the Skies continue and grow. So I want to thank everyone in the chat tonight. I want to thank everyone for the super chats, super stickers, and for just having the conversation with us. I thought it was definitely worth talking about here on Somewhere in the Skies. So thank you to Dan. Thank you to Luis for joining me. Thank you to all of you for being here tonight. And I will leave you with our slogan, as always, for Somewhere in the Skies: keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching Somewhere in the Skies. Take care, guys.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.